There was a family that had two kids, one in fourth grade and one in sixth grade. And it was the fourth grader's birthday, so a special occasion. And as is the tradition at a lot of schools, you bring cupcakes or something like that for, you know, the classroom. And so on this particular day, the fourth grader could not carry the cupcakes inside. And so the whole family was driving to drop the kids off at school. And the parents said, "Hey, can you help your younger brother carry the cupcakes in?" So the sixth grader says, "I don't really want to." So the father, who's in the front seat, sees a teachable moment and says, "Now come on, William, what would Jesus do?" And so William said, "Jesus would heal him so he could carry in his own cupcakes." Now, I don't know if you've ever gotten a response that you did not expect. That's a dangerous question, what would Jesus do? Because you never know what's coming back. But that's where John the Baptist finds himself today. John, who is this central figure that we hear about every Advent, was a fiery preacher and teacher, and he was telling people that the Messiah was coming and that things were going to change. There was going to be a revolution of epic proportions. It was going to be lit. And we're also told today he's in prison, and this is a place that is giving him plenty of time to think and reflect, and it's likely leaving him with some doubts and questions. Now, it's clear that John had been keeping up on the work of Jesus, and he was likely actually underwhelmed by it. He hadn't heard the dramatic stories of the revolution happening, and so he sends his people to ask, are you the one, or are we waiting on someone else? And I wonder, in your life, have you ever been underwhelmed by God's response? I read a story recently of a woman who went to buy her partner a birthday card, and the outside read, "Sweetheart, you are the answer to my prayers." On the inside, it said, "You're not what I prayed for exactly, but apparently you are the answer." And this is probably where most of us find ourselves on any given day, stuck between what we prayed for and what apparently is our answer. Now, what I also find striking about this gospel passage is that John is not offered a ticket out of his situation. There's no apparent reward for good behavior. Furthermore, he's only given a somewhat vague reassurance that God's revolution is happening, and he gets little to no uncertainty that all of his sufferings are worth it. And he, like all of us, is invited into this radical form of hope that God somehow is moving in the world and in our lives, even if it's not what we are expecting or what we specifically asked for. And this Advent season holds up what we hear in our second reading, this patient waiting, and asks us to enter into it as a holy time. Now, in this day and age, I know that I have grown accustomed to what I think of as Amazon Prime spirituality. We point, click, and in 3 days or less, it's at our front door. And how easy is that, right? And so I've come to expect the same sometimes out of my own prayer life, and maybe even out of like work for social change. Pray, click, delivered. Now, unfortunately, God does not seem to work this way. God seems to move very, very slowly sometimes. So I've been thinking about images of God, and I think I've settled right now on the sloth. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with sloths. They are perhaps the slowest creature on earth. They move less than 50 yards in a day. Generally, they sleep 15 hours a day. It takes them about 30 days to digest a meal, and they can't see very well. Now, this may sound like some of your relatives, but maybe those relatives are actually closer to God than you thought. But in an outcome-driven world, this God doesn't make a lot of sense to us. The arc of God and God's storylines sometimes take a long time. And we want the plan. We want to know if it's working. We want some certainty. We want deadlines. And I can just picture God saying, when God hears our concerns and prayers, "Don't worry, I'm coming. And we are left holding little but our hope. Now, it's very important to remember that hope is not some kind of wishful thinking or this obliviousness to the realities of the world. Hope is this real sweet spot between optimism and pessimism. And if you've been a dedicated Bills fan over the past decade, you have been spiritually prepared for this work. Now, the poet Maggie Smith says in her poem, Good Bones, the world is at least 50% terrible, and that's a conservative estimate. Hope does not deny that bad exists, but instead it tries to choose a joy even after having considered all of the facts. There's a woman named Kate Bowler, who's a really amazing theologian, who in her mid-30s was a tenure track professor at Duke University. She had been married a few years. She had a beautiful baby. She had her doctorate, and she was publishing her first book. I mean, everything about her life, you would say, my God, she's blessed. Until she received a diagnosis of stage 4 colon cancer and was given about a year to live. This forced her to do a lot of soul searching. It changed her faith. And it made her question our culture that tells you you can live your best life every day. And so she wrote two books, one called Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved, and another, No Cure for Being Human and Other Truths I Need to Hear. And these chronicle her very difficult journey with cancer and her decision to hope anyway. Now, in her books, she says that she's come to peace with the fact that life isn't always getting better, and that we live in a terrible, beautiful mystery of a world not yet redeemed. She says that often the best we can hope for is to keep loving, keep trying, and stumbling in the dark, only to begin again in the dawn. This kind of hope is not for the faint of heart. As many of you know, my work is as a counselor and a social worker, and I think about people I had conversations with just this past week. A couple that doesn't know if they're going to stay together. A mom whose adult son struggles with mental illness and chemical dependency, and she feels afraid every time the phone rings. A man whose life is plagued by the pain of chronic illness. A woman who's going to be evicted from her house in less than a few weeks. And a grandmother who fears that the violence in our community will claim the life of one of her grandchildren. All of these people do not know how their stories are going to turn out, and most of these situations are not going away tomorrow. They all pray for relief and are working towards favorable outcomes, but they, like us, like John the Baptist, and like so many throughout history, we try to be faithful in the face of uncertainty. It takes a lot of courage to live with uncertainty. And courage in the root word that comes from heart. It takes heart to live with uncertainty. Now, many of you have likely heard of the work of Brené Brown. She's a pretty famous social worker and researcher. And she studied what she called wholehearted people. And her research concluded that these were the folks who showed up in life in an engaged way without having a lot of guarantees. And Brené says that our struggles actually teach us how to hope. Hope is a function of struggle. But she also has this great line that she uses. She says, hope is brokenhearted on the way to becoming wholehearted. Hope is brokenhearted on the way to becoming wholehearted. Now, during our Advent reflection series this year, we're going to be using the work of theologian Dante Stewart as a guide to help us reflect. And Stewart wrote a beautiful series of Advent reflections on Black history and spirituality. They're called Prophesy Hope, and they're actually available online if you want to take a look at them. And in these reflections, he reminds us that in the Black tradition, we witness a rich legacy of hope that creeps out of bent bodies that bore the weight of the world upon their shoulders. He says that this hope lived deep in the souls of Black folk and could not be crushed by their cruel surroundings. He goes on to say that it cannot be crushed still and finds itself expressed in Maya's caged bird, Martin's dream, Baldwin's fire, Langston's sermon, and Bell's love. This is the kind of hope that I think we need to apprentice ourselves to and learn from. And while it clearly testifies to the pain and the loss and the difficulty of waiting, it also holds the power to remind us of things forgotten, awaken what is dormant, energize that which is active, and give hope where hope seems lost. Holding on to hope, while it is something we all try to do individually, is something that we must do together. It's a collective project. And we hear in our first reading that God asks us to strengthen hands that are feeble, make firm knees that are weak, say to those whose hearts are frightened, fear not, be strong. Part of our Advent journey is to hold hope for each other and to hold each other up as we live our lives. Now, as I've been thinking about hope these days, I've been thinking about two people in particular. On a personal level, I think about my sister-in-law, Janine. Now, as many of you know, my mom was sick and died in July of this year. And Janine came to Rochester from Portland, Oregon, numerous times, often for weeks at a time, to be with mom and care for her in her final phases of life with multiple myeloma. Well, about 5 weeks ago, Janine herself was diagnosed with bladder cancer. And she's now on that journey, a journey that so many of you and so many families know all too well. Now, as you can imagine, Janine has felt stunned, afraid, and angry, trying to hold on to hope in the midst of so much uncertainty and the painful waiting, waiting for appointments, waiting for information, waiting for results. But in her Caring Bridge pages, she's been journaling and offering her readers some beautiful reflections. Inspired by Rumi's poem, The Guest House, Janine talks about striving to encounter the cancer and all that comes with it as uninvited guests, guests that might have something to teach her or guide her somehow. And every day she tries to keep finding, as she says, the beauty in the mundane, strength in the muck, stillness in the fatigue, and grace in the slog. I've been deeply inspired by her these past few weeks. And in terms of social change work, I've been inspired by the man named Peng Lifa. Now, Peng is known as Bridge Man and as the man who lighted a spark in the darkness. Most of us haven't heard of him, but in October, in defiance of the Chinese government, Peng hung two banners off of a busy highway in Beijing. And the banners said things like, "We want food, not COVID tests, and we are citizens, not slaves." His banners were promptly taken down after just a few hours, and government censors have scrubbed the Chinese internet of any mention of his actions, and he was promptly arrested. 2 months later, he is now considered the person responsible for inspiring thousands upon thousands of people to protest in China, the biggest protest China has seen in a generation. His messages have been secretly appearing on bathroom walls in public spaces, and they're being airdropped from tall buildings throughout China. And since the protests, the seemingly immovable Chinese government has changed course and has now altered COVID restrictions. During Advent, we place ourselves firmly in the uncertainties of life. We get glimpses of a horizon that has not yet arrived, and we seek to move towards it, yet never in straight lines or well-marked paths. All of us have uninvited guests in our lives these days, depressions and sorrows that we did not ask for and that we cannot get rid of easily. And we all have collective longings for freedom and liberation that can seem impossible as we read the daily headlines. But down deep, we know a change is going to come. So as we seek to find our own beauty in the mundane, strength in the muck, and grace in the slog, may we do what we can, as long as we can, as often as we can, to wholeheartedly bring about the world that we dream of, and may we try to take some comfort that God is indeed at work in the world and in our very lives, even if we do not see immediate results or get what we expected or asked for.